So we want to record a podcast episode. Hey, thank you for joining the Escape With Me book club. Escape with me, Sam Reiner.
And me, Hannah Rossell.
Into our most recent read. Come with us as we evade reality and go into detail about a new book. We'll be covering the book from beginning to end, so there will be spoilers. Today we're going to an alternate timeline where George Washington decided to become king. Published September 1st, 2019, American Royals follows four women in the 21st century of this timeline. The heir, the spare, the best friend, and the ex-girlfriend. As Beatrice is pressured into getting married, watch how the world of luxury and constraint spins around our four narrators. Is it even possible for them to all have happy endings? Is it even possible for one of them to have a happy ending?
I don't know, man. Some of them don't deserve a happy ending, if we're being honest.
One of them. Well, maybe two. We'll talk about it. But for background, I read this series. I've read almost all of them. I haven't read Rain, only because my library hadn't gotten it yet. It just came out in, like, October.
I was gonna say, it just came out, because when I was Googling, because I was like, is it the trilogy or series?
It's a series.
Yeah. Which apparently was only supposed to be the first two books, and then everyone was like, you need to do more.
And I'm glad she did. But we will get there. I have read the first three. Anyway, age level, this is young adult. And content warning, very light. Language, sex is implied. Always fade to dark / implied. If you really wanted to, you could probably convince yourself, for the most part, that nothing happened. Because sometimes it fades to black and they're like, but nothing happened. Death of a parent and then death from prolonged illness. Felt appropriate.
Compared to all our other books, this is a pretty tame list.
So tame.
I don't know what that says about us.
Not the tamest one I've ever done. Judge a book by its cover.
Big Amelia Thermopolis vibes.
The only thing I knew about the series going in was that my friend Danielle read this book and she liked it. And I was like, okay. And so that's how I started this series. And I looked at it and I was like, okay, so that's the queen of America, maybe? Or it could have been a socialite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like American royalty, even though they're not royalty, but they're super rich or something.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. I was like, okay, that's the most important person. And technically, I'm not wrong.
Technically, no.
Because by the end of the book, she is queen.
Yeah.
Feeling pretty good about it. But I thought, because it was American royals, that it would specifically just focus on the royal family if there are multiple narrators or viewpoints. And it is not. Two of them are, and then two of them are not. And I appreciate how the author uses them for world building.
Yes, I did think that was a really cool way to do the world building and then getting it from everyone's perspective.
Yeah, because just to go straight into it, because bleh. Okay. So this is a second read. First read through, I totally felt for Beatrice the entire way.
Okay.
I totally felt for Sam. I was like, oh, that really sucks. You're in a suckish situation. Totally felt for Nina because, duh, Nina has it the worst out of all of them.
She really does. Feel bad for her.
And I didn't feel bad for Daphne, but I didn't hate her either. I got it.
Really? I didn't. Oh, no.
I got it, though. For what she's doing, I get it. I get where she's coming from. I usually like a good villain in that I like a villain that's smart and good at what she's doing.
Yeah, she's a good villain. As a character, as a person, I did not like her.
Because that's the thing, even when I was hating on her and being like, ugh, because I get minus 1 point when I read this the first time because of Daphne. But at the same time, when I got to her sections, I wasn't like, oh, great. You again. I was excited to see what would happen.
Yeah, she hooked you in. Not all characters can do that.
Second read through. Okay, Beatrice, I get it. But Connor, this dude. This is the dude? Are we sure?
I feel like she just got feelings for him because of forced proximity throughout college.
Well, it's forced proximity, but it feels like when they had that moment together, rope bridge theory.
Mm-hmm.
Rope bridge theory is essentially the theory that if someone is walking across a rope bridge and looks up and sees a person, they might think, oh my gosh, I'm in love with that person. But in actuality, because they're on a rope bridge, their heart is accelerating. And so it's the same thing where it's like, oh, he saved my life. And so your heart's beating really fast. You're like, oh, this is love. When your body is just like, no, I'm just freaking freaking out because we almost died.
Yeah.
And that feels like when she really caught feelings from him, is when he protected her and she was like, oh my goodness. And then she kisses Connor in the moment.
Yeah, and then just spiraled.
And then it devolves from there. But this guy, this is this guy. Screw all the plot. We're just going to talk about the boys right now. This guy is the stupidest whatever. He has been around the royal family for most of his career, but he doesn't understand that Beatrice can't just marry a commoner when it is literally illegal.
Right?
It is a law. And he's like, how dare you try to be a responsible monarch? He's there guilting her the entire time.
He's so manipulative.
Ugh. He's never understanding, like, oh, what you're going through is really hard. I understand that you might have to do what's best for America. No, he's pissed off. Like, how dare you not? Oh.
How dare you not give up your title and give up everything?
He was mad at her because her parents invited a bunch of dudes there.
Yeah.
To meet her. And he's like, what? Is this The Bachelor? Basically.
Yeah.
Yes, first of all. But second of all, what did she do wrong? What did Beatrice do wrong in that moment? Nothing.
And he's always so pissy when Teddy's around.
He's manipulative and rude and, ugh.
Not charming.
This is the guy we're going to tie our horse to, Beatrice.
Honestly, I think Beatrice only fell for him because it was a revolt towards her parents.
That too. It's forbidden love. She had a rope bridge moment. They were together and first love vibes. This is the first time she's felt a real emotional connection with someone. And she's worried she's never going to get that again. It's the people that looks for excitement over stability, which I get.
Yeah.
But does not always lead the right way. It's all very complicated, but in this situation, this guy.
He's not up to the anti-Hastings Club, but we might have one for him too. We'll see.
So that's my feeling the second read about Beatrice. I still feel really bad for Beatrice, and I don't think her romance is what she thinks it is, and Connor's the worst. That's my feeling on those two. Second pairing, Sam and Teddy. Girl! You made out with him once in a coat closet.
What gives you the right to be like, he's my
What gives you the right to be so mad?
And literally, he was like, I wouldn't have made out with you if I had known why I was there. But then, of course, he makes the choice to continue doing that as well, so. Sam, there's a reason you're the black sheep of the royal family. Can we have some self-reflection, please?
And I love her character progression in the series, and she's one of my favorite characters. She was one of my favorite characters in the beginning. I like her style and whatnot. Also, she has my name, which is weird. So you kind of hope you like the person.
Yeah.
But in this book, I just couldn't take her seriously the second time. We'll get into details, but that's my overarching thesis. Sam, you made out with him once in a broom closet.
And you were drunk.
When you were drunk. And then he starts dating your sister, and then you go out of your way to kind of tease him and be like, but you still like me, right?
Yeah.
If I didn't know Beatrice and Teddy were fake dating, I would be upset on her behalf.
Yeah.
Okay. And Teddy bears some blame here. It's complicated. Because they're fake dating, I get that Teddy's like, yeah, if I had the choice, I probably would have picked you to see where it naturally progressed.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a good guy. Teddy is just 10 out of 10. I'll take off a point for the skiing escapade nonsense.
Yeah.
Because he is culpable of that too.
Mm-hmm. I do like Teddy though. Even with the secrets he's keeping, I feel like I still like him.
And you're gonna leave that for Connor?
Yes, because rebellion.
Third pairing, Nina and Jeff. I love Nina.
I really liked her.
Nina is a national treasure, and she does not get treated like it, but she should.
I liked Nina. I thought she was very down to earth. Yeah, she made some bad mistakes, but she's also, what, 18, 19?
Yeah, I think they're 18, because I think she's the same age as the twins.
Yeah, she's a freshman in college. What 18-year-old doesn't make a stupid mistake? And she did not deserve any of what happened to her.
No! And for Jefferson? Jeff is trash. Yeah, he's a cute, fun, golden retriever boyfriend, but she's upset about things and he's like, it's okay, minimizes her feelings about it. And she is right. It happens. And he's just like, But you shouldn't care what everyone thinks when they're actively harassing and bullying you.
Yeah, right?
In person and online.
He probably has no idea how it feels. And he's just up here like, oh, that's not a big deal.
I know that's your normal. And you probably have publicists to weed it out. Because Sam is even like, oh, I don't read haters' comments. Why do you read hate mail? And your dad's like, well, it's good to keep you grounded and stuff. And there's a healthy balance in there, probably. But minimizes her feelings constantly.
Still obviously has feelings for his ex.
My big thing where he's like, okay, you're trash and I hope you and Daphne are very happy together. Not. Is she comes to him and is like, Daphne just told me X, Y, Z. And he goes, no. Daphne's not like that, but Nina's a liar?
Yeah.
And he takes it as an, oh, you misunderstood her. Oh, so Nina's the type of girl to misunderstand important things and to paint people as villains?
Uh-huh.
There's some steps Nina would have had to take. This wasn't an accidental, anyway, trash.
Yeah.
I'm glad. But Nina does make some decisions that I'm like, meh, probably could have been better, but you're dumb and young and I get it.
Yeah.
I give her more leeway than Sam because she's on the whole a lot more responsible.
Yeah.
So there's more bandwidth to give her.
I feel like Sam's also very manipulative with Nina.
Yes, that's...
Sam, chill.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get there, because we're just giving our general feelings here at the start. So it's very obvious what my bias is going in. And you can click off if you're like, well, Nina's the worst and Jeff is the best. See yourself out. I hope you're very happy with this book series. But once again, we have a dud for a boy. And technically, Daphne's the same boy. And once again, that's why I'm like, I get it. Nina's in there for feelings and Jeff is kind of the worst. So I don't care that Jeff is the worst to Daphne because Daphne doesn't care.
She's there for a goal.
She's there for a goal and a title. She knows what she's after. So I'm like, okay, I don't care that Jeff sucks.
You're gonna get what you want.
Anyway, her thing, though, is she and Ethan, once again, stability versus excitement, seem to be having some sort of chemistry going on.
Oh, yeah. And it's so funny, because Daphne's like, I can't believe he would sleep with someone else. Well, girl, you did the same thing. Why are you so mad when you did the same thing?
Yeah. But, okay, here's a very interesting thing, and I'm curious your thoughts about this. Notice how the only one to actually have sex in this book is the bad guy?
Oh, yeah. The other ones talk about how I considered, but it never happened.
Yeah, Nina and Jeff didn't do anything. They made out and then she passed out on the bed.
Yeah.
Beatrice makes out with Connor.
But that's it.
And Sam made out with Teddy and you hear about her dating, but it seemed like, we messed around, but nothing super serious.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. Only the bad girl that you shouldn't like sleeps around.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to point out that she was technically 17 when this, or younger, because she's 17 when the book begins. I don't know why the author was like, yes, let's make her a year younger. I didn't realize that the first read through.
Yeah, she's the youngest in the book out of the leads.
Yeah, she's 17. I'm like, that makes me feel weird. Yes, it's a year, but legally, I'm going to assume the laws are different.
Maybe, yeah.
But I don't know. I think that's a little weird to have all of your main characters to be adults legally and then have a 17-year-old. Anyway.
Just make her a high school senior who's 18 already.
Ethan! When I first read this, and this is how I feel this time, they deserve each other.
Yeah.
Because Ethan is Jeff's best friend, and they sleep together, so it's the girlfriend and the best friend, because cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Daphne feels bad about it, but Ethan doesn't.
No, he does not.
He purposely puts himself in situations where he can be like, Daphne, you and I should be together. Because Jefferson and Daphne aren't together when the book begins. But he's like, Daphne, you and I should end up together. That's not gonna look sus to anyone.
Yeah, he went from dating one to dating his best friend. That's not weird.
And Jeff is stupid enough not to piece it together, but
everyone else would.
It's sus. Anyway, the whole setup is Beatrice has graduated from Harvard. She is getting into all the queenly duties with her father. Sam and Jeff took a gap year to go to Thailand and be about their nonsense. Nina is in her first year of college, and Daphne never goes to school.
I guess.
But she's a senior in high school because all the time Nina's like, my class, my class, my classmates, my class. But the only time you see Daphne, and I noticed this time how significantly less chapters she has than the others.
So maybe she's in school?
Maybe, but every time you see her, she's like, oh, I'm volunteering, or I'm chasing after Jefferson, or I'm on vacation. We never mentioned school.
Yes. How do you have time to do that in school?
She doesn't.
Maybe she's homeschooling or something?
No, because she's in that private school that Sam went to because it's next door to the one Jeff went to. Which, by the way, if you're going to have gender-specific schools, why put them next to each other? You foiled your own plot here. Anyway, that nonsense beside us. Give us at least a city block. My gosh, they can literally walk over to the other one. There's a strip of lawn where it's next to each other and they can stand in their own spaces. And what is the point? Anyway, I honestly feel like, just personally, as someone who went to a co-ed school, I feel like it's worse when you separate it, because when you see a guy, it's a novelty.
Yes, it makes it seem more
forbidden.
Yeah, that's the word.
You can think of them in a very specific way and make it more of a fantasy versus if you're actually sitting next to guys.
Yeah, and you realize, oh.
Yeah, you see them all the time. You see them as a human being instead of just some romanticized prince. Anyway, my personal feelings aside, but what is this podcast but my personal feelings? We start off and there's a queen's ball. Apparently it happens once a year. People get knighted, as you do. And Beatrice got to help with that. So that's how we start off this. And this is how we meet everyone, basically.
Yeah, all the key players, at least.
So Beatrice got to nominate the people who got knighted. She's super excited about it. And this is the ball where she's going to meet all the guys in a bachelor-esque, not really. Really? That's so rude to her. Anyway, she's going to meet all these candidates, and Beatrice canonically is not close to her siblings, because if she was, a lot of things would have been resolved.
Yeah, if you just communicate with people, shocker.
But I will give it to them that they do not communicate well. All of the people are set up really well, and so when they do make mistakes, okay, yeah, that's within your personality. You're not just being stupid.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're being drunk, but you're not just being stupid for stupid's sake.
Yeah.
So Nina gets smuggled to the ball, basically, because Sam is like, I want you to be there as my plus one. Even though Nina's pretending like she doesn't know them, because I don't blame her.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine.
That is perfectly reasonable thing for her. I'm surprised she doesn't tell Sam that she's doing it, because I feel like if she would have explained it, we could have solved other issues. But Nina is also not very good about telling Sam things.
No one's good about communicating at all.
But I'm really surprised. And they play it off like, oh yeah, Nina's always standing to the side. No one pays attention to her, blah, blah, blah. I don't believe you.
Yeah, would the paparazzi in at least over a decade of friendship not have gotten a picture with her in it?
There are fashion bloggers that blog literally every outfit that Sam and her mother and Beatrice wears. You're not telling me that they're not also doing that for the best friend.
Right? Or is it just everyone only pays attention to the royal family? Because Ethan's also, oh yeah, he's just off to the side. But then Daphne, the girlfriend, gets a ton of attention, but the childhood best friends don't get a ton of attention.
That also goes on all the trips.
Yeah. I can understand why the significant other would get more attention, but just none? Unless the castle purposely, when they do the photo calls and everything, has them where they can't. No, but they can see everything, so the photographers would be able to see them.
It's like the Met Gala. You take pictures of everyone.
Yeah. Wouldn't a paparazzi person, paparazzo, whatever it is, have taken a picture of Ethan or Nina and sold it? Because they would have made money.
How are they not following her around anyway to be like, oh, Sam's best friend? I don't know. That's beside the point.
Yeah. Using her to get to Sam or using Ethan to get to Jefferson.
You're telling me if a Kardashian, yes, I'm equating it to the Kardashians, if a Kardashian suddenly showed up in an Instagram post or on her TV show with a rando, that this person would not be hunted down and found out every scrap of information?
Yeah, I mean, they do that with just other celebrities are seen with. Or even like Selena Gomez's best friend that donated her what, kidney or something? She's relatively normal, but people know about her because she's best friends with a celebrity, or was best friends. I don't know all that drama, but you know.
Yeah, they know her name. They know so much stuff about her. They're like, oh, they're beefing. They pay attention to that. Okay.
Not here, though.
So a little bit okay about that, but Nina is pretending like she doesn't know Sam at school.
Which, I mean, I can't blame her. Can you imagine the amount of questions friends.
It would be so bad. I'm so glad she didn't. Her friends are the real ones. Her best friend has an on-again, off-again boyfriend. And that boyfriend is a better friend to her in this book than Sam and Jeff.
Yes. Yeah, I think they genuinely care about her.
They are pulling bodyguards. They aren't saying squat to the paparazzi. They're telling people off.
Yeah. Those are your friends, Nina.
This rando on-again, off-again boyfriend is a better friend than her actual boyfriend.
Yes. Those are the people you need in your life, Nina.
And so I'm very glad she found them.
Yes.
I will say there was a moment where she's like, oh, everyone else in the lecture hall has a laptop, but I'm the only one writing on pencil and paper. And that very easily could have been a Not Like Other Girls, but I'm gonna give it to the author because I don't think it's I'm not like other girls, I'm quirky like that. I think it's I cannot afford a laptop.
Even though your family worked for the royal family.
No, I believe it. She's there on scholarship.
That's true. I'm shocked she didn't get a hand-down laptop from Sam or something.
I think her pride is enough that she wouldn't have asked.
Yeah.
And I don't think Sam would have been like, oh yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, she probably wouldn't have ever noticed.
So I'm gonna give it to her mainly because literally me, my first year in college, paper notes until I could get a job and afford my own laptop. Oh, I feel you, girl. So good job, Nina. So yeah, so that's how she gets smuggled to the ball. Daphne is there because reasons?
It's Daphne.
Apparently her family is still important enough, even though they make it seem like they're not that important.
Yeah, like they're falling out of favor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and they barely have a title.
Yeah, they're the lowest of low.
I don't know. Anyway, Daphne got invited. I'm shocked that they're like, you know what sounds good?
Daphne.
Inviting Jeff's ex-girlfriend. I could have understood the parents and being like, oh, the parents get invited. But the fact that Daphne herself got an invite was okay.
Yeah.
This drama cow. Mom and dad are set up for the drama cow. They are the drama cows in this book. The king and queen. Throughout this book, I'm just going to point out that they specifically are the foil. They are the drama cows. They pop in to cause issues.
Yeah. I mean, Daphne's parents are also not great, especially her mom.
No, they're the scum of the earth. They're living through their daughter, but pulling a, oh, after everything we've done for you, even though it's what everything Daphne has done for them.
Yeah.
I don't want to say parentification, but kind of parentification. They made her the adult. You need to be the one providing for us in that you need to provide us with a title.
Yeah.
I don't even know. But the point is they want her to be princess.
Yeah, princess.
Yeah. So anyway,
it'd be interesting to see what Daphne would have been like without the influence of her parents.
She probably could have cured world hunger.
Is it as driven as she is?
Or something. She is very intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
The book makes it very clear she's very attractive. I think she could have done some good with that. Anyway, we'll see her story progression as these books go on. But for this book, she's trash. Her parents are trash. Ethan's trash.
Most everyone.
Everyone got it in her proximity.
Yeah.
That aren't forced to be there are kind of trash.
Yeah.
But she's there, so woo!
Yay.
Yeah. So, like we said, Beatrice talks with Connor. Sam makes out with Teddy in the closet. And conveniently, this is the reason I'm giving him a 9 out of 10 and not minus all of the points. He specifically says, at that moment, he did not know what he was there for.
Why wouldn't his parents tell him ahead of time, like, before they get to the ball?
Why wouldn't his parents before they get to the ball?
You're there to meet the heir to the throne. Why would they not tell him that ahead of time?
Where are they sitting down and having like, now son, I know you thought that was very interesting. Even though they're not concerned, their son was not there for the event. Maybe they were, not really. It never comes up. Anyway, where are they sitting down to privately be like, now son, now that we're here halfway through this event, I just want to let you know, you need to go try to woo Princess Beatrice.
Yeah.
But we've sent her all your information. She knows literally everything about you. And good luck. Where are they having this conversation? You know where it would have been good if we're going to hold it to the last minute? Surprise, surprise. The limo drive over.
Yes, the car ride. A private setting.
I have questions. Clearly the Eatons aren't that. Anyway, they're losing all their money. And I'm not terribly surprised.
The questionable decision making spans generations.
Just a little little bit. So that's why I'm going to give Teddy, because he didn't find out until in between, after he made out with Sam, like, hey, you're here to meet Beatrice and woo her. Save our family. Bye.
Yeah, he just thought he was there for a good time. It's your responsibility now, even though it wasn't your fault.
I mean, truth. Beatrice has a panic attack. Connor makes her feel better. Daphne is very patiently waiting to approach Jeff. And she is so desperate. And she knows she's desperate, so at least I can give her that.
Yeah, it's so funny. She's like, I'm so desperate. But then she looks at these other girls like, ugh, they're so desperate. Calling him Jeff. Girl, you're just as desperate.
They're desperate, but she's the main character. She has main character syndrome real bad, even though she has the least amount of chapters in this book.
Yes, she is still the main character, and no one can tell her otherwise.
There's a thorough section where she's just gone from the narrative.
It was the most peaceful section.
So she tries, so Jeff is dancing with her, and he's like, I'm sorry, and walks off in the middle of the dance.
He's a real one for that.
Well, that's kind of a crappy move, Jeff. Like, I get it, but...
Yeah, at least wait until the end of the dance, right?
Decorum of some kind, but...
But he's the prince. He can do whatever he wants.
He's Jeff. He can do whatever he wants. So Ethan just runs in and is like, let me dance with you. And we get to know them a little bit more. And this is, of course, the point when Sam comes up. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm in love with Teddy, blah, blah, blah. And then Teddy's hanging out with Beatrice and whatnot. And Jeff ends up talking with Nina because Nina's like, I hate it here. And I don't want to see Jeff dancing with Daphne. So she walks off to the secluded area. And Jeff shows up because, of course, he does, because this is a romance book. Do not get it twisted. This is not science fiction. It might be an alternate history.
But this is a romance book first and foremost. Oh, absolutely.
Although they do have fun little twists. We'll get there. But first and foremost, this is soft science fiction.
Yeah.
Heavy romance. Nina calls him out for making out with her. Apparently, so this is where we get to learn their tea. All of them have past tea that we get to learn throughout the book, but this is when Nina drops hers. Graduation night. Sam and Jeff throw a rager, which, by the way, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
The king and queen that are terrified of bad press.
Let their kids.
Are gonna throw a rager where 18-year-olds are getting drunk out of their minds and trashing the plays.
Yeah, they obviously throw parties because they have the whole New Year's one where they make people check their phones.
They check their phones and it's on somebody else's property.
Yeah.
I don't believe you for a second, but okay.
Yeah, and you know they wouldn't have let Beatrice do a rager. Not like she would have asked.
Yeah. So anyway, apparently Jeff and Nina start making out even though Jeff and Daphne are still together.
Yeah.
She is very drunk. I will give that to her. He's probably very drunk. I'll give that to him. In the morning, he breaks up with Daphne. Doesn't tell her why.
Even though she knows, but she doesn't say anything, so.
She knows, but she's not going to say anything because plan.
Yeah.
But this is where I'm like, oh, he's been distancing himself from me for months. Da 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 da. Yeah, break up with her. Sir. Anyway, to add to that, he makes out with her. She passes out on the bed when she's like, oh, I don't want to go any farther. He's like, oh, okay, that's fine. And she passes out on the bed. In the morning, he's gone, doesn't text her or anything. And a knock on the door happens. She opens it and it's a driver. Oh, we need to get you back to your house. Then he doesn't text her for, what is it, 6 months that they're gone?
Yeah, he ghosts her.
She is not nearly mad enough, in my personal opinion, but she's a very nice person. Because Jeff kisses her again, and Nina's like, no! And tells him off again. And then he's like, well, can we try again? And Nina says, maybe. You know it's gonna be a yes. Have we ever read a book where a girl's like, maybe I'll get back together with you, and then didn't?
No. There should be a book like that.
I know that happens in real life, but that doesn't happen in books, so...
Boundaries, the book.
That was an obvious, and I was like, Nina, this is not going to be good for you, but alas, we learn.
We had some character growth through some tough moments.
And oh my goodness, this author. Okay, for anyone who doesn't know, my form of note-taking, one thing that I do is take note of everybody that is a named character in case they become important later, obviously. This author. Everyone has names. Literally everyone has names. I have people on this list
that are never mentioned again.
Three of them are just one of Sam's dance partners at the engagement ball.
Yeah.
One of them is random girl at the engagement ball who doesn't like Nina.
Not everyone deserves a name. It's okay.
There are people on here that I only know by their title. Lady Carl is a lady.
Yes.
I know nothing else about her. There are seven pages of names.
Yeah, I was scrolling through the notes and I was like, how many names? Because it doesn't feel like that many when you listen to it.
Because they're throwaways. And normally when there's a throwaway, the author just throws them away. It's like a lady or this person or this girl or this woman or this man.
Yeah.
And it's fine. This is an issue only for me. Because I have to write down every single one of them. When I read this originally, I did not have an issue with it whatsoever. But yeah, I had to do that. And this is my podcast, so I'm going to complain about it. There's a character that comes up at the Queen's Ball that's a main character in the next book. And I just found it fascinating. Anyway. Yeah, so Beatrice hangs out with all the guys. They're all kind of duds. She leaves Teddy kind of for last because he hasn't sought her out.
Yeah.
And so she's like, hey, let's hang out, which is very awkward because Connor is her personal protection person. So while they're having this private conversation, he has to awkwardly stand there.
Right? You're at the palace. Can you not be weird?
That's so awkward.
Yeah.
That would be so awkward even if I didn't have a crush on my protection officer.
But if her protection officer is there, where was Sam's protection officer or Jefferson's? Why is Beatrice's protection officer there, but none of the other royals have their protection officer?
Because Sam and Jeff are out running them. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
They're running away. I have their names, if you're curious, but other than that...
Those poor protection officers must be so stressed.
Oh my gosh. If this job doesn't send you to an early grave, I swear. So they talk, and Beatrice decides that he's cool enough to be the one to be like, hey, parents, stop hounding me. I did think there was an interesting symbolism here. It specifically mentions that Sam unties Teddy's bow tie and Beatrice reties it. I like the symbolism of it. Sam is chaos and makes him, quote unquote, loosen up and whatever. But Beatrice is formal and nurturing in a way and caring and reties it, brings him back. Anyway, I think it's good symbolism.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even catch that.
I liked it. I see you, author. But yeah, so that's the guy that gets picked. And then by the end of the day, Connor's basically ignored Beatrice.
How childish.
He's so jealous. This is before they're a thing. And he's just like, how dare you go through with this? It's like, you're childish jealousy right now.
Yeah. And he uses the, like, I'll just leave my position to manipulate her.
Ugh. All the time. Throws it out there all the time. Ooh. Anyway, this is where the bro bridge theory happens, where she's like, well, then leave then. And then a blast happens and he protects her. She's like, oh my goodness, he's protecting me. And then you find out, oh, it's just a firework that went off.
Yeah.
Okay. Who set it off? Was it Jeff or Sam? I want to know. They never tell us.
Right. It had to be one of them.
It had to be one of them. Anyway, we never get that. But.
Or unless the elder sister of the king, one of her kids, if she was there.
Yeah. So that's the setup. And then we get all the drama about Sam being like, oh no, Beatrice and him,
Teddy,
goodness, what is his name?
Beatrice and that guy,
the guy that I like the most.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that happens in the middle, Daphne is being Daphne, she's amazing and secretly in league with the press, even though she hates the paparazzi. She hates them so much. I don't know what you're talking about, Nina. Sam makes it very clear that she feels like her parents don't care about her, they only care about Beatrice and Jeff because he's the boy. Beatrice goes out of her way to hide the fact that her parents were like, you need to marry someone. I don't know. Personally, I would have made that a family thing. You're telling me the queen didn't sit down and is like, Sam, Jeff, I don't care what you do tonight. These 10 people you are nice to.
Yeah, right? How was it not shared with the immediate family?
That would have been a family event, wouldn't you think? But no. So Beatrice goes out of her way to make it weird. And so Sam's like, well, why are you going after Teddy? You don't even like him. But Beatrice doesn't say anything because that would be communicating.
How difficult.
Gotta milk that drama cow.
Oh, yeah.
And Nina's doing college stuff. Woo! So anyway, moving on to their first date, Teddy and Beatrice's. They go to a play, and Beatrice apparently, canonically, hates musicals or plays in general.
Yeah.
Because she finds happy endings unrealistic.
Yeah, and she finds plays unrelatable.
Girl, there's an entire genre of plays called tragedies.
Have you just not read Shakespeare?
Are you just not allowed to watch them? I don't know. There's so much in theater where I just feel like she could have felt something with someone. There are so many forbidden lovers and unhappy princesses and terrible forced marriages. Anyway.
Theater could have been her escape, but no, we hate it.
Because the plot point of when it changes is George Washington agrees to be king instead of becoming president. So all the stuff before that happened.
Yeah.
You're not telling me she didn't feel something for Romeo and Juliet? Anyway. Not the point. The mom. The mom does the seating arrangements and decides to have Beatrice and Teddy in the front because, you know, of course.
Yeah.
And then sits Sam on the other side of Teddy.
Yeah, interesting.
I know you don't know, but are you kidding me? Queen. She has a name, but I'm just going to refer to her as her title to simplify things. Nina's there too. Once again, why does no one care that there's a best friend?
Yeah, how would no one notice a random girl in the Royals box?
I feel like they would sell that because people would buy it. The charity case best friend, she's a commoner just like everyone else, and all the little girls can be like, oh, I could be a friend with a princess too.
She's also the daughter of a fairly high up official.
Yes.
At one point. I can't remember the exact job her mom had, but...
Yes, and she's in charge of treasury stuff now. Which, by the way, well, let's talk about Nina's parents. The world building for a second. The only thing that bothers me. It is canonical that it was illegal for a queen to rule. Not like, oh, it's not done, but literally illegal for a woman to run. And Beatrice's dad changed that, so Beatrice is now going to become the first queen. And we don't see it a lot in this book. We're going to see it a lot in the next book. But people are misogynist pricks about it. But gay marriage, free and clear.
But no women in power.
No queens, but ladies and people with high titles, both working and in the gentry, have openly lesbian marriages. And I'm not saying that, oh, gay rights will always come second. I'm saying that the misogyny is more.
Yeah.
Because when you have one woman and you're misogynist against her, and then you have two women and they don't have a man, the misogyny is a lot more.
Yeah. But in this case, everyone's just okay with it.
It's mentioned in passing sometimes, but not like you think it should.
Yeah.
So I have questions. All for the representation. I love it. I don't know if you noticed, but the isms tend to be wrapped around each other. It's not usually just one.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be racism in the next book. So it's got racism as a real issue. You have misogyny as a real issue, but gay rights, eh, it's fine.
Yeah, that's okay.
Do what you want. Free love. We listened in the 60s.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. That's a little bit okay, but yeah. Okay. So, not the point. So yeah, Sam is sitting next to Teddy being miserable the entire time. Beatrice is being miserable the entire time. And the play goes on and it's all about this woman that's supposedly first queen. Like, she was queen for a day. She announced herself queen even though it was illegal. And then she just disappeared the next day.
Yeah.
And no one knows what happened to her, but this is the first piece of fiction. The entirety of fiction has never made her feel anything, but this does, and it freaks her out, and she runs away, and Connor comes to comfort her, and it might have gotten romantic, but Teddy shows up, and Teddy gets her, because he also is like, yeah, my parents are making these decisions for me, and I have to consider things because of the title.
Yeah.
And it is so much better, because Connor lives it by proxy.
He sees it happen, but he doesn't understand it.
He doesn't get it.
He can sympathize, but he's unable to empathize, because it's just not an experience he's had.
I don't know. Anyway, Sam is dense. All of these things are happening around her and she doesn't realize it. Like, Jeff and Nina talk to each other and giggle, like, forever.
Yeah.
That's gonna happen for a while. And Sam's just like, oh, they're being friendly.
When they've never been this friendly in the past and now all of a sudden, that's not weird?
Yeah. But while at the party and she's getting drunk, she barbs at Teddy Fair at this point, honestly. And she decides that Jeff, Nina, and her should leave and get pizza. So they do. And then that night, Beatrice comes in and is like, do you think our aunt, who married a random person, commoner, she was supposed to be queen, didn't become queen.
Some Hollywood movie star, yeah.
It's a Hollywood movie star that's still acting. She's like, do you think she's happy? And Sam is like, yeah, you know, all these people that have abdicated their throne and whatnot.
And Sam doesn't have a thought.
Sam doesn't get it. She's so confused.
Not a single thought.
But this is when the king and queen shows up to be like, hey, guess who's coming to New Year's?
And Beatrice, rightfully so, was annoyed that they invited her
sort of boyfriend.
Yeah.
But once again, all of that conversation and then the parents being like, you did a good job, kid. And Sam's like, why is Beatrice going for Teddy? Sam.
Sam is just stuck in the woe is me and doesn't have a single thought about anything besides that.
Maybe she also has main character syndrome because she's paying attention to no one else. Anyway, New Year's vacation. Yay! They throw it at a club. They also do a lot of skiing.
Every year, apparently.
Every year. There's also a weird note where Daphne's like, if the Washingtons just played with the paparazzi would be nice to them. And then cut to this scene where the Washingtons are like, hey, we'll give you an exclusive, then you have to leave us alone. And the paparazzi are like, yes.
They do play nice.
What do you think they're doing? They have an entire team to do this. Daphne.
Yeah.
So, maximum drama. Teddy's there, but Beatrice isn't. And the press seems to know that Jeff is dating someone, but won't say who.
Sam still hasn't put it together.
So Sam keeps getting forced to be around Teddy, and she's upset about it. And Jeff and Nina are sneaking off to do romance things, but up, who shows up? Daphne.
She's back.
Desperation indeed. So Daphne tries to run into them. It's like, oh, Jeff, we should go skiing and whatnot. Jeff is like, yeah, we're besties now, even though you tried to hit on me at the ball very clearly. And she does it again. And she's like, I have feelings for you. And he's like, cool, let's just be friends. Stop trying to be friends.
Yeah.
My gosh. If you never wanted to see her ever again, you wouldn't have to. Rah!
Yeah. Dude, not a single brain cell.
Not a single brain cell. But Ethan lets it slip that Jeff and Nina are together. Ethan. And so Daphne is just like, cool, I'm going to now plot her downfall.
I feel like Ethan purposely let that slip.
I think Ethan's an idiot. You gave him more credit than I do.
Fair enough.
And maybe even he was like, look, he's happy with someone else. You should be with me.
Yeah.
I think Ethan's an idiot. But Beatrice is traveling, but she's delayed by the snow and they get snowed in. And why is it just her and Connor in this place? First of all, where is literally everyone else staying?
Yeah.
They had to find a random Airbnb and she's got this little cottage. So she goes out there. Where's the driver? And literally all the other people that were on the plane.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have to have romance because this is a romance first situation. And so she and Connor are finally able to have romance and be together. And she's like, why can't I just stay here for forever? And then Sam has that whole situation with Teddy in the hot tub. And she's like, why can't Beatrice just stay away forever?
Seems like you guys want the same thing for once.
Also, Sam ends up owing Jeff a dare that never comes up. And I was curious what the dare would be.
Oh, yeah, it never does. Yeah. Watch that come up in, like, book 4 or something.
True. So all of that happens. There is this whole nightclub where, like you mentioned, they take your phones. Only certain people can get in. Daphne went as far as to fake text messages to Jeff. Here's the thing with Ethan. He plays both sides of the fence, and it kind of makes him a weaker character to me. Because he's both, leave Jefferson alone. You want to be with me. But then here, in this scene, he's like, hey, I'll let you get into the party so you can talk to Jefferson. And maybe he's like, well, maybe she'll finally see it this time, except she knows he doesn't like her. He doesn't get her. They're not good together. She just wants a title. He knows this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's giving her too much credit because later on he gets mad at her about it. And I'm just like, I don't know what you were expecting here.
It's not like she's ever been, well, she might be a little bit covert about what she wants, but also...
to everyone else, but she's been honest with Ethan. She literally tells him everything.
Yeah, except about her friend, Hinamari.
Nope, he knows about that.
Oh yeah, he does. He literally knows everything, yeah.
He knows everything. Anyway, Daphne pulls a complete desperation with Jeff and is like, clearly, if I promise to sleep with you, like, oh, we can totally sleep together because she's been saving herself, but... Jeff is like, no, I'm seeing someone else. And so she runs into Sam, starts drinking together, and gets publicly intoxicated for the first time ever. And Ethan's like, you need to go home. You are very drunk.
Yes.
So he gets her out into a black car. And this is the point where she's like, well, fine, I'm taking Nina down with me.
If I can't have him, you can't have him. Very childish.
Anyway, we're going to ignore Daphne for like a third of the book now.
Yes. She comes back as plot advancement later.
Way later. I didn't catch it the first time, but I caught it this time. I was like, when is she coming back? Anyway, Beatrice Beatrice and Connor show up, and they have all these romantic feelings about each other. Beatrice and Connor at the castle, he sneaks into her room, they spend their nights together, they don't sleep together, because no, that's only for Daphne.
Yes.
And so she's trying to figure out how she can marry Connor, and then the Chamberlain shows up, is like, oh, your dad wants to talk to you. And after a long conversation about duty and ethics and history and nostalgia, he is like, hey, I'm dying.
Which, after getting to that part, you sort of see signs leading up to it.
Oh, yeah. There's moments where Daphne was like, oh, he looks a little run down. Or Sam goes on a run with him. It's like, hey, he's not running as much as he normally would be.
Or like when they're skiing.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you kids, go ahead.
It makes sense now why that was happening. Very well done.
But it's so manipulative how he does it. He's like, I want you to marry Teddy because I want to walk you down the aisle before I die. I get it. That's something you would want, but that's so selfish.
Don't tell your daughter that when you don't know how long you have to die and you're forcing her into a relationship.
Yeah, you have to get married as soon as possible because I'm on like stage 4 lung cancer.
4, which is untreatable. Yeah. Just because your arrangement worked out with your wife does not mean it works out for everybody.
Have they even technically been on 3 dates? They went on a date. They invited him to the vacation.
That's it. So that's 2. They haven't even been on 3.
But anyway, so that snaps her chance of being with Connor in her mind. Nina and Jeff are secretly dating until they're not so secretly dating. And the castle's like, oh, you need to sign an NDA.
Yeah, and Nina the whole time, Jeff's like, why can't we just go public? Why can't we just go public? And Nina's like, because it's not going to go well. And it goes public, it doesn't go well. And Jefferson's like, oh my gosh, like, what did you think was going to happen?
But it doesn't matter. All that matters is us. Jefferson, this is what bothers me. Beatrice is beat over the head with the fact that she's a princess going to be queen. Fair. Well, I don't know about fair, but comes with the territory. Jefferson never cares that he's a prince.
Yeah, and it seems like Sam and Jefferson are just oblivious to the fact that they could potentially become queen or king if something happens to Beatrice.
True.
I would imagine the royal family of any country is like, hey, you might be the 4th sibling, but there is still the potential, should anything happen, that you become the monarch.
This is why the whole Harry thing became such a spectacle with the English monarchy, because you hold those kids in a vice-like grip.
Very.
But we're Americans. We do it different. We do it with drama. Well, I mean, they do it with drama, but we do it with public drama.
Yeah, the revolting child.
Yeah, that happens, and it's nuts and terrible. Beatrice has to propose to Teddy, doesn't tell Connor, Beatrice.
Once again, how do you think this is going to go?
How do you think this is going to go? This is what gets me. They go to a room. It is basically a soundproof room. Connor closes the door. He's standing on the outside. What happens if they need something? What happens if someone breaks in? A soundproof room? Are you kidding me?
I guess the king's office is soundproof, because how did Connor not hear Beatrice having a whole breakdown in there after her dad was like, yeah, I'm dying?
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's just soundproof or something. How did you not hear her sobbing? You don't sob quietly.
I was more okay with that because it's dad and her. But this is a random dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the Eatons, but he's not family. What if he attacks Beatrice?
Yeah.
Anyway, Connor stands outside so Beatrice can propose. Teddy agrees.
It's very business feeling.
Because it is.
Yeah, I think it was well done. It felt that way, like, listening to it. It was like, yeah, this is a business deal.
Yeah, and so Beatrice, at this point, finally reveals that night to Connor that her dad's dying. Doesn't tell him about the engagement. I can't. Let's skip everything else. Let's talk about this. How Connor finds out about the engagement is nonsense, first of all, because this would not have happened. But they are sitting down in the palace for a sit-down with this random person that always does all the news broadcasts. Because of course he does. Tradition.
Yes.
They are literally sitting down about to tell the American public on TV
about this engagement.
That this is happening. This is a recording moment. Connor's day off. So this other dude, Jake, is standing there inside. They are in the middle of recording talking about this. And Connor walks in while they are announcing that they're being engaged during the, I think, live coverage. He gets upset and he walks out. Why was Connor there? That's never clarified.
Yeah.
Why was he allowed to walk in as they were recording?
And no one had a question, like, why did your security guard, whose day it was off, walk in and walk right back out? That's not weird to anybody.
No, and only Beatrice was like, oh no. And apparently it didn't show and Teddy covered or something. Nonsense. Anyway, and so after that, she runs off, or I think in the middle of that, I can't even remember at this point.
I don't know.
She runs off to go see Connor, and Connor's like, I can't give you what he can, but I have a Sharpie in my pocket. I know it was supposed to be romantic, but considering how half done all of his attempts have been, him proposing with a Sharpie and drawing a ring around her finger, I wasn't for it.
It seemed like he wasn't going to propose at all, but then he was like, oh no, I could lose her. Let me propose now to keep her. Does that not scream manipulation to literally anybody that knows about this? Beatrice, girl, you are smart, but yet so dumb.
I think I was surprised the first time I read it more than anything. But the second time I read it, I was just like, this wasn't it, fam. I'd rather you have proposed with a piece of grass you picked off the ground than taking a Sharpie out of your pocket and drawing a ring on her finger.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, why are you proposing to her?
Other than just to keep her in?
I don't know.
Once again, manipulation.
Because Beatrice pulls a not so great, and she's like, oh, I'll marry Teddy, but I'll be in love with you. And Connor's like, nah, 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 fair.
Yeah. What was up with everyone having their own side piece in this book?
Really, though. So messy. But he proposes, and I don't know how he thinks that's supposed to work. Because in the beginning, he was like, oh, we can't be together because of your title. But now he's like, nah, whatever.
Now all of a sudden that I might lose you.
It's literally illegal for you to marry me. But, you know.
Do it anyway.
I would have gotten it if it wasn't the law. And they don't make it that clear until much later when Beatrice is like, hey, Dad, I should marry a commoner. He's like, it's illegal. Even if you changed the law, what are you thinking? And so I just, it is literally the law that she can't marry you.
Yeah, dude.
You have so much training to be around these people.
And you just ignore the law? Is that what it is?
I guess so. So that's stuff that she's doing on her nonsense. When Nina's news broke, she stopped talking to Jeff and Sam.
Which, fair.
Because she didn't want to talk to Sam because she's like, well, crap, I haven't told her this whole time and I don't have the bandwidth to have that conversation. She doesn't want to talk to Jeff because she also doesn't have the bandwidth for the conversation of, I freaking told you so.
Yeah, I understand taking time.
She ends up taking a lot of time, though.
Yeah, it was an excess of time.
There's an interesting part. This whole time, Sam is really upset about sexist things and people being sexist to her and people paying more attention to Jeff and that kind of thing.
Because he's the boy, blah, blah. Yeah.
Well, there's a moment before she runs off and breaks into Nina's room where she's talking to Teddy and trying to talk him out of marrying Beatrice. And she goes on this rant about how she'll always outrank you and the country, aka her career, will come first. But if he marries her, she'll always put him first. What sexist BS was that, ma'am? Oh, it's clearly fine if a man outranks a woman, but if a woman outranks a man, you're gonna resent her.
Clearly.
And it just felt so, how dare you focus on your career and keep your last name-esque sounding.
Yeah, you've literally spent the whole book complaining about how you can't get away with anything because you're a woman, but you turn around, you are just as bad.
And maybe that's a little bit of realism because, yeah.
Yeah.
Internalized, but I'm gonna call you on it, Sam. That's what we're here for. And then she goes and yells at Beatrice for not being a literal mind reader. This is when I was like, Sam, she makes out with this boy in a closet. Tells Nina and no one else. She keeps barbing with Teddy, but doesn't tell anyone else. And then she goes and yells at Beatrice for taking her man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's not your man.
It's not your man, but how the heck would Beatrice know that?
Yeah.
And she's mad, she's like, because I like Teddy. And clearly Beatrice is just trying to do this to get attention? What?
Yeah. And then the whole book ends with Sam's like, wow, I've gotten a lot closer to my sister. Huh?
The literal line that she says is they, as in Beatrice and Teddy, they didn't get to play the victims here. Not when she was the real casualty of this engagement. Are you delusional? Have you lost your sense of reality?
How are you the casualty of this? No one's forcing you to have feelings for this man. No one forced you to make out with him.
You made out with him time in a closet and then in a hot tub.
And the second time you knew what was going on and you still were like, let me kiss him. I don't feel bad.
Ma'am. First time I read this, I was like, wow, they're really coming head to head about this and finally talking about it. But now I'm just like, excuse me? Oh my gosh.
Stop acting like you're the victim when you're the one that keeps hurting your own feelings.
Really though. So anyway, she goes to Nina about this and Nina is like, well, okay, we need to have this conversation. And Sam's like, well, why didn't you tell me about this? Were you laughing behind my back? And then Nina pulls up, honestly, we weren't thinking about you at all. Because yeah, Sam, they weren't thinking about you. This wasn't a huge ploy to laugh at you specifically. They were just dating in secret because they didn't want people to know about it. And I really wish they brought this up to Sam herself. Because in the beginning, they're like, well, should we tell Sam? And then they both remember all these times where Sam learned something and then the press found out about it.
Yeah, Sam, you can't keep a secret to save your life. They didn't tell you because you would have told the press.
Exactly. But they don't bring it up here. And I feel like they should have.
Is that not a time for Sam to be held accountable for her actions?
At least make it her actual actions. That's totally fair to be like, if we told you, you would have told the press and then listed the things. Anyway, the important thing here, though, is Nina gets her because Sam's like, well, okay, now that I'm here, I want to tell you about Teddy and Beatrice. And he's like, excuse me? You came out all this way to talk about Teddy? And I'm the one going through a crisis? And she gets her. And then Sam decides to complain that Nina doesn't have photos of her on her dorm wall. Ma'am! Just as a thought, trash. And then Nina has this moment where she thinks of all these times Sam is a terrible friend. I wish she would have brought them up.
Yeah.
But instead of bringing it up, she brings up that she doesn't feel equal to them in their friendship. Interesting route. Oh, but there was a good one. And the Oscar goes to Nina because Sam is like, but I think of you like a sister. And Nina is like, well, I see how you treat Beatrice.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I don't want to be your sister if that's how you treat your actual sister.
I cannot. That was amazing. Didn't actually solve any problems here, but that was amazing.
It was good. It was a good comeback.
Oh, wow. So Sam leaves. Sam is now distressed that she can't even beat Jeff in a racing game because it's still all about Sam. I will give her this, though. Jeff is like, hey, have you talked to Nina? And she's like, yeah. And she explains how Nina's feelings and does a very good job of explaining what was actually said and how it made Nina feel. She does a very good job. I don't think I necessarily would have gotten that, oh, we make her feel lesser because we push her around and stuff like that and give her hand-me-downs of things and don't see her as a person. And she goes into it. I was like, okay, that was a very mature response. I don't necessarily think I would have gotten what she got, but I'm glad she did. Good for her.
Yeah.
Love to see it.
Someone's got some emotional maturity here.
So then the queen comes up because we haven't had enough drama lately. Boy drama. We've had girl drama. We need boy drama. That's what romances are for. So she shows up and she's like, hey, Sam, I need you to come help me. And so they go to the crown jewel vault and the queen is like, hey, Sam, help Teddy pick out an engagement ring for Beatrice. Oh, by the way, I've got a phone call. Bye, ma'am?
Okay.
There's this whole moment where Sam puts a ring on her finger and is, I don't know. She seems way too flighty for marriage.
She does.
So I don't think it felt as impactful as it should, where it's like, oh, you couldn't be marrying Sam. I don't know. That seems a little weird. You barely know her. And even later on, they're like, oh, let's give this a try. They're like, let's see where this goes. They're not like marriage.
Let's get married. No, it's...
But anyway, they pick out a ring for Beatrice. This is where the interview happens. She needed to have a ring. Anyway, Connor kind of reminds me of Sam.
Yeah. Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. So anyway, Connor's like, well, I'm going to resign from my position of fair at this point, honestly. And Beatrice accepts.
But he also seems to use it as a manipulation.
He uses it to throw it in her face. We'll be like, well, then fine. You'll never see me again. But of course you will.
Good. Leave. I don't want to see you again. Bye.
And that's kind of how Beatrice acts. And then she puts the actual diamond ring over the Sharpie one. I really hope that Sharpie dried. That was the first thing that popped into my head. And she's like, and she puts the ring over the Sharpie one. And I was like, oh.
Hopefully the Sharpie dry.
I don't think it had enough time to dry. You're going to have to clean that off.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear.
They'll pay someone to do it.
We have people for that.
Yeah, they got people for everything. They'll clean the ring.
Yeah. So this is the part where Nina and Jeff start publicly dating because Rachel's like, you can't just keep living like this. Come to a frat party. She goes to a frat party. Jeff shows up with a milkshake for her, and then they start publicly dating.
Yes. Has this boy just gone his whole life without ever having a milkshake? Like, I know he's the prince.
Yeah, a convenience store milkshake rocks his world. Okay.
Like that TikTok trend. Name something that would kill a Victorian child, a Wawa milkshake. Name something that would kill Prince Jefferson.
I could have bought the food truck tacos.
Yeah.
Because I've had some real good food truck tacos, but a convenience store milkshake?
Also, if you guys order pizza out, what's stopping you from getting a milkshake?
From significantly better places.
A well-known place.
I never get those. I'll buy it when it's like, oh, there's this hole-in-the-wall place.
Yeah.
Mom and pop shop. So they're really authentic. Or something like that. But a convenience store.
That's pretty popular. Okay, yeah.
I guess this is Steak and Shake 2.0. Which is another thing. Jeff takes her to a fancy restaurant.
After she talks about how she feels like she doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
At the ball. And Jeff goes, yeah, let me take her to a fancy restaurant.
But no one finds out that they're together. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Anyway, they rent out the entire restaurant and no one's getting alarm bells. Okay, maybe you didn't know before then, but no paparazzi walking around is like, hey, wait a second. They're in there. Their paparazzi is not as talented as ours, apparently.
Mm-mm. No. No one snapped a cell phone picture. Yeah.
So, leave halfway through the meal, and then they go to get the street cart tacos and the convenience store milkshake. So that's what he gets her. He's like, oh, here's a convenience store milkshake, the meeting of worlds. And so they start dating publicly. And Daphne's like, well, crap. This is where she pops up.
It didn't backfire.
Daphne finally shows up. Where you been, girl? Everything has been happening. So she shows back up. She's like, well, what am I going to do? Well, she goes to a dress shop.
Yeah.
And sabotages Nina. It's like, hey, we should get dresses together or whatever. Oh my gosh, this dress is going to look so good on you. You should get it altered. And then, of course, she calls and cancels the order, pretending to be Nina. So Nina shows up and she's like, oh my gosh, I need a dress. And they're like, your dress isn't here.
You said you didn't want it anymore. Do their voices sound that similar? Doubt it.
I think they did it as a favor for Daphne, but that's beside the point.
Oh, yeah, true.
I get wanting to be petty. I get it. But as a business owner, because a business owner does walk up, publicity beats petty.
Yeah, the prince's new girlfriend is wearing your dress.
Yeah, your loyalty to Daphne, sure, whatever. She is going as Jefferson's date. You got too many eggs in one basket. All I'm saying, you don't have something you can pull out to be like, it's okay, we will give you a dress. She's actually paying for it. Daphne doesn't pay for it. Anyway. So that's how Daphne pops back up. Beatrice and Sam have a moment together where Beatrice is trying to make herself macaroni because apparently she doesn't know how to do that. But Sam does. I have questions.
Yeah, the whole scene in the cabin when they're snowed in and she doesn't know how to cook. I mean, I guess I can see that if you've always had someone cook for you.
Yeah, but then Sam knows how to cook.
Yeah. Did they just do all their cooking when they were traveling abroad?
I don't know. So this is where Beatrice lets it slip. Their father
is dying.
Has been dying of lung cancer, told Beatrice because monarch to monarch, has told none of the rest of the family. Like, oh, I'll tell you when it's time.
Not even his wife, right?
Not even his wife, because the wife doesn't find out this man is dying from cancer until he's in the hospital dying.
Yeah.
On his deathbed. That's how she finds out her husband has had fourth stage lung cancer. She handled that better than I would have. So they have a heart-to-heart, and Sam admits that she's jealous of Beatrice.
Shocker.
And Beatrice admits she wished she could choose her past like Sam could, and they promise to have each other's back as sisters. Wonder how long that's gonna last. So Sam confronts her father, and instead of asking immediately about it and being like, hey, I'm mad about this thing, he shows her the box and goes through the whole, yeah, I read letters from the average people, and I read hate comments, and by the way, Sam, I believe you can do good things. In fact, I'm going to give you a board seat on the Washington Trust, which is a massive fund that funds charitable things.
Yeah, why aren't you having this conversation with her before when you could tell she was obviously struggling?
What has she done to earn the seat besides being a Washington is all I'm gonna say.
That too.
Sam takes it in stride and she's like, I'm gonna really think about my future. And so it worked, ended out for the good, but like it very easily could have not.
Yes.
If she didn't know her dad was dying, I don't think she would have taken this nearly as much. She would just be like, oh, this is just another thing you're just forcing upon me to be the spare.
Yeah, when she doesn't realize that when Beatrice is on the throne, and before she has a child, Sam is the heir to the throne.
Yeah.
Does that thought not occur to her?
No, she's just in spare forever.
Yeah, because they have the whole line, they call her the Sparrow, and she hates that name because she's just the spare.
Which you really easily could have been like, hey, what the heck? And they would have changed it.
Yeah.
Oh, well. That would require communication, which we have already established. None of our characters are good at.
Yeah. You can't play the victim card if you communicate, so no communication for me.
Yeah. So, anyway, this is the part where Sam and Nina make up, because Nina now remembers, oh, there are times when Sam is a good friend. That wasn't the issue. We had other issues, but that's beside the point. Anyway, it's kind of awkward, because Nina's like, well, crap. I need something from her, because she needs a dress real bad. And so, she goes to Sam.
You couldn't just ask your boyfriend for a dress?
I know, I think she's right. I mean, she needed to make up with Sam because they were having issues that weren't the issues that they talked about, and they do kind of make up better for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes Sam is selfish, and that's a different issue that they should bring up and talk about, but she's a good friend because Nina walks up and she's like, hey, this is awkward, I need a dress. And Sam's immediately like, I got this.
Yeah. Private collection. Yeah.
Somehow hasn't even been worn before. Turns Nina into her Barbie doll. Nina's like, you would have done this so much sooner if you could have. And Sam's like, you bet I would. So I'm going to enjoy this.
That is so real of her.
They talk about it. And then Nina's like, oh, I don't think Daph did anything on purpose. Girl.
Stop seeing the best in people.
And Sam decides not to tell Nina about her father dying. I get it.
Fair.
I get that one more.
Yeah, you're still processing that yourself. Yeah. Some stuff doesn't have to be shared with everyone.
Not at that point in time.
No.
Daphne shows up and immediately decides she's the most beautiful girl there. Which always makes me question. She's like, I'm so beautiful. And when you call yourself beautiful, she's like, I know I look beautiful. I'm like, are you just your type? Just because you're conventionally attractive doesn't make you beautiful in everybody's handbook? I'm just gonna say it. People have different tastes. Ethan pulls her aside to dance with her and they're romantic. And Daphne's mentally like, oh, should I be with him? Till her mom walks up. And it's like, no. And Daphne's like, well, maybe I don't have to be princess. But Rebecca's too, her mom, is too busy living life through her child to actually care about the good of her child. So she's like, no, you can't do that. Get on this.
Yeah. Daphne could have just been happy with Ethan. They deserve each other.
A little bit. So Jeff and Nina are talking and Nina's like, oh my gosh, I love him. Where Beatrice is starting to fray with all the people being like, congratulations, Beatrice. Because this is their engagement ball. Beatrice and Teddy, congratulations over and over and over. And Sam and Teddy are doing their best to support her, but she ends up running away.
Yeah, and Teddy covers for her.
That is her coping mechanism in this book. How many times has she run away? She ran away from the Queen's ball. She ran away from the date. She ran away from this.
The interview.
She did run out of the interview. That really is her coping mechanism. I see why she goes on morning runs with her father. She's got to stay in shape to do the run.
Gotta be able to run away from your problems.
Connor shows up because of course he does.
Yeah.
He shows up to her engagement ball to give her a present and then gives her a hard time for talking to him. Like, oh, you want to talk to me now? Why are you here? And then after being like, oh, so you want to talk to me now? He turns around and is like, oh, I'll be your guard again. We can be lovers even though you're getting married. Pick a lane.
Dude, you say you're gonna quit so you never see her again, but then you want to become her secret lover?
I can't. But Beatrice has decided, no, she must call off the wedding because Connor is her true love and she's going to talk to her dad tonight.
Once again, big Emilia Thermopolis vibes. Not for the marry your true love, but for calling off your wedding.
So while this is happening, Nina's in the bathroom and Daphne attacks and it is like, you're not good enough for Jessamine. You're a piece of trash. Oh, and by the way, I totally did cancel your order. And she just goes on the villain tangent of all the evil things she's done to Nina, which probably felt really good because she has so many issues where she's like, I'm so tired of people thinking I'm this perfect, wonderful when I'm smart and clever and I want them to see that. But Nina does manage a good punch in the fight because she's like, you're pathetic. Your entire life is surrounded around getting Jefferson to pay enough attention to you to grant you title of princess. She's like, yeah, that's kind of pathetic. athletic. But Nina wins the bout.
Yeah.
And now Nina goes to talk to Jeff, and she's like, there's issues in our relationship, and also Daphne did this to us, and Jeff doesn't believe her.
Which, Jeff, that's your ex. Just say you still have feelings for her.
She has been desperately pursuing you for months.
And you say she couldn't do that.
The density.
He totally still has feelings for her.
I don't know what genes the twins got, because Beatrice isn't necessarily dense. She's naive. She's not dense, though.
No.
Twins got something from somebody. Anyway, they break up because, duh.
Yeah, right after she's like, I think I'm falling in love. Wait, no, never mind.
It's been a roller coaster, really. On the other hand, Sam's having a great time because Beatrice is like, hey, I'm breaking up with Teddy and I'm going to talk to Dad tonight. She's like, yay. And she goes over to Teddy. He's like, hey, they're breaking it off and we should talk in the coat closet and the kiss. And they're like, yeah, let's see where this goes. How is this going to work? They mention it briefly. They're like, isn't it going to be weird that I'm suddenly dating her sister? But Sam doesn't care about publicity because she lives in a bubble where she doesn't read hate comments.
And she's used to always just getting bad publicity anyway.
I guess so. I don't know. I think she just ignores all of it because she has a team to do that for her.
Yeah, although doesn't she mention how the press is always just talking about bad things she does?
Yeah.
Or just ignores her altogether. So she knows she gets publicity. She just chooses to stay ignorant.
Yeah, I blame it on the fact that they have an entire team to actually do the work for her.
Yeah.
If she was, for example, an influencer, she would have to deal with all of it herself.
Yes.
But she doesn't have to. She lives in a privileged place where she has a team of people that does that for her. Anyway, so she's excited. And on the other hand, Jeff. Daphne walks up and she's like, hey, what's going on? Whatever. And she drinks scotch to impress him. Reconstrues what Nina did to make herself look good. She's like, oh, that never happened. I did XYZ. She must have misunderstood me. I meant that I felt so bad. I felt like it was my fault. Not that it was my fault. Boy. Then she uses nostalgia and is like, well, we should just be friends. You know, we can still be friends. Even though I'm constantly pursuing you.
And he just believes her.
And Jeff falls for it.
He totally still has feelings for Daphne.
Good. Keep her. Trash.
Once again, they deserve each other. She either deserves Ethan or Jeff. Honestly, no. Ethan's too good for her. She can have Jeff.
So on her way out, Ethan gives her a ride home. And Daphne spills her entire plan again to Ethan. I have a question. Because he's in a car that someone else is driving. Like they have private drivers. Is there glass there?
Or is the driver just got a really good NDA?
A real good NDA, because how is Daphne's entire plot not being plastered on the front page?
Right.
But she reveals everything in the car and then go back to their place where they sleep together again. I have no idea how Daphne got him in the house without her parents noticing, because it's weird to me that her parents weren't waiting at home to jump on her to be like, well, did you do the thing?
About how the ball went. Yeah.
But apparently that didn't happen.
Yeah. Also, how did her parents not jump onto her about getting drunk at the New Year's Eve party?
I don't know. They go between paying too much attention to her to too little attention.
Yeah.
Consistency is all I'm saying. But Beatrice goes to her dad to talk to him about it, and he gives her some wisdom, gives her some advice, but she's like, no, I'm gonna marry him. I'm gonna make him a commoner. If I can't change the law, I'm gonna abdicate the throne. Because his whole thing is, you're gonna be the first queen. You have enough to deal with as a first queen. You want someone by your side that you can count on, who understands, who's consistent.
And Connor clearly is not that person.
And stable.
Yeah, Connor has shown that he can't understand you.
He can't understand. He's very unstable.
He's only happy when he gets what he wants.
He's the worst. And he's like, hey, he's gonna resent you.
Because you're gonna have to put other things before him.
Because the weight of this crown, he's gonna be picked apart daily in the media for being a commoner, and forever and ever is gonna be told he's not good enough for you no matter what he does. That's fair. He starts coughing up along when she's like, well, then I'll abdicate. And then he gets rushed to the hospital where we tie up our loose ends. Daphne wakes up with Ethan and Ethan's like, we should be in a relationship. Daphne gets notifications at the hospital thing. They're in the hospital. So Daphne gets dressed and goes to the hospital and Ethan's like, you're the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You knew her plan the whole time. You really thought sleeping with her again would make her change her mind?
You saw her hand and what she was playing for.
And you got shocked.
Brain cells.
Yeah, maybe he isn't the smartest. Maybe I do give him too much credit.
So Daphne goes to the hospital and is all buddy-buddy with Jeff, because of course she is. Nina is about to do that. She has a really on-the-nose dream about Daphne, and I was like, that doesn't feel like a dream. They're playing a card game, I think poker, and she plays her hand and has a really good hand, and Nina has a crappy one, and then Daphne pulls in all the chips. at least throw in that she's playing with her stuffed animals from childhood or something. That's a little on the nose for a dream.
Yeah.
Anyway, the important thing is she wakes up and she's like, how am I supposed to do anything now that Jeff and I have done all these things? Like, I can't go to Wawa. I can't do this and that because I've done it with him, which we are here for Sam's patented breakup advice. When you break up with someone and you have memories of doing stuff with them, do it again. Cover up the memories with more memories.
Better memories.
If your first date was to IHOP and now every time you think of IHOP, you think of him, take your friends to a midnight IHOP. Or isn't IHOP open at midnight?
I don't know.
Take your friends to a 5 p.m. IHOP trip and eat some waffles. Whatever you did, do it again.
Does IHOP sell waffles?
Well, I know, at least they know they have French toast.
I know they have French toast.
But the point is, do it again. That is Sam's patented breakup advice. Feel free to use it. Has worked for Sam her entire life. You just cover it up. You have new memories. You move on. Suddenly, next time you think of IHOP, you might think about your friends. Maybe you'll think about him tangentially, but it won't be the only memory. So that would be my advice to her. Go get a Wawa milkshake. That's the first thing you should do.
Go with your actual friends who are actually good to you.
Try another flavor.
Yeah.
Anyway, she goes downstairs and she sees her parents crying and learns about the king. And she tells her parents about the breakup. And they're like, well, you need to go be with Sam anyway. And she's like, okay, I'm going to go do that. So she goes and she's about to go find them when she sees Jeff and Daphne walking by, and she decides, no, I can't do this, and leaves and kind of texts Sam like, I wish I could be there, heart.
Yeah.
Shame. That's the only time I'm like, Nina, I get it, but
also go see your friend who's losing her dad.
Yeah. That's the other thing. She told Jeff and she runs away and whatnot and she leaves. I wish she had told Sam. Sam would have believed her in a second.
Oh, absolutely.
Sam would have told Jeff a new one, mad at him.
Sam would have been like, how the heck did you not believe Nina?
Anyway, she doesn't, which makes me sad.
Yeah.
Once again, this is how the queen finds out that her husband is dying from lung cancer. So he suddenly gets a 2 a.m. ambulance ride to the hospital.
Yeah.
So she goes and she talks to him and she decides not to break off the engagement publicly. And Teddy has been told to act like he is engaged until told otherwise. So they are outside meeting the people, Beatrice and Teddy, who are the engaged couple, and Sam. Cool trio. When a doctor runs out, and then everyone just automatically knows that the king died.
Yeah.
And so everyone bows to Beatrice. And so we end this with Beatrice and Teddy are still engaged. Connor is
bitter.
There. Jeff and Nina are broken up. Jeff and Daphne might be a thing.
They're at least talking. Yeah.
There is open for that. Ethan and Daphne are not friends.
No.
And, oh yeah, we finally learn that Daphne spiked her friend's drink because she was going to tell that Ethan and Daphne slept together to Jeff.
Yeah.
And so they spiked her drink and she was walking upstairs and then she fell downstairs and now she's in a coma for like the past 6 months.
And I have a feeling Daphne's never going to be held accountable for that. Like, she's just going to get away with it. I feel like that's how it's going to go.
Come on! Chekhov's gun did not come up in this book, but you knew this was planned as at least a duology. Come on.
Yeah. The best friend's got to wake up because the best friend has all the tea.
It's got the drama. We have a drama. We are missing a drama cow. The king has died. We have the queen still, but she becomes significantly less important, honestly. So we need more drama cows.
Yeah, gotta bring back the best friend in a coma.
So that is the ending. That is where we are. No one has a happy ending, except for maybe Daphne.
Yeah, probably only Daphne.
General thoughts. I give the author a hard time because of the characters, but the author does a great job with characterization.
Uh-huh.
They're different enough where you can just vibe. You know the person. You could listen to songs and be like, oh, Sam would like this song. Or Nina would like this song.
Yeah, each character felt very distinct. It's not like some books that you read where you're like, all these characters are the same thing, but with just slightly different looks.
Yeah, and the character's voice sounds different enough. And so they're all their own person, and it's great, and I love it. And she does a really good job with all four of the narrators. And like I said, when you read Daphne's part, even when you're like, ew, I hate you, you don't hate reading your part because you're like, but what are you gonna do? What's happening?
Yes. How delusional are you about to be? Let me hear it.
I want to see it. I want to know. We all watch trashy TV here. We can all admit it.
Oh, yeah.
We want our Daphne in there.
We'd love to hate her.
But you get Daphne. You get enough of her background. It doesn't make her sympathetic, but you get it.
Yeah, the world building, so well done.
That was the thing. Let's talk about some fun alternate history stuff, because it's always the fun thing of, well, if that happened, what else doesn't happen? And I like to see when some authors like this is super soft. And so instead of being like, oh, all of these separate things, because we also do Harry Turtledove on this channel, and he's like, oh, well, all of these other things splintered off and are completely different from this one point. But this author is like, nope, everything's the same, just for different reasons, because they got the Louisiana territory from France, not because of somebody selling it, you know, the Louisiana Purchase, selling it to fund wars. The king won it in a gambling contest.
Which I love.
I love that, but as an actual consequence, how are those people not hanging that king?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, we get Louisiana and all that stuff, because one of the things is like, oh, they became a king, and so instead of creating the Constitution, which then inspired other countries like France, they still have monarchies. Spain has a monarchy, Greece has a monarchy, France has a monarchy. Some of those, obviously, in our timeline reality, still have monarchies, but they're in much better positions and less figurehead.
The state still exists in the U.S.
Yep. I am fascinated by how much research she did, because she names like random dukedoms or just pieces of territory, and I'm so interested. I feel like she has a map. I would like to see the map.
Oh, the map, and just how much research had to go into this.
Teddy bears. They mentioned with Teddy, it's like, haha, teddy bears. So they're called teddy bears because Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy.
Yeah.
Well, this timeline, they don't have a Theodore Roosevelt, but that's okay. They had a King Theodore who died as a child, which is very sad, but he was what inspired teddy bears. Just little things like that.
Yeah.
She's like, I get it. And this is still going to be a thing. I like the bending around to make it still happen. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I appreciate how the little details like that just make the world feel a little more real.
Yeah. Here's an example. I told my husband about it. I'm like, this is an alternate history where he became a king. And he's like, well, it's hypothesized, probably true. It's hypothesized George was infertile. He and Martha never had children together. How are you going to have a monarchy? But later on in the book, which I think Sam's in the gallery looking at everyone, it points out the second king was King George's nephew.
Yeah.
Related, I'm pretty sure, to Martha, because Beatrice points out that she can trace her lineage through Martha back to gentry and nobility. So it makes me think that their blood, but maybe not King George.
Yeah.
Anyway, so little things like that. You gotta appreciate the hustle.
Yeah. How much digging did you have to do?
How much research have we done?
Yeah. How many hours and hours of research went into this?
For a silly little romance book. I gotta appreciate it. Still soft science fiction. Don't comment this if you're like, I love science fiction and Harry Turtledove is amazing and all these other people. Come for the romance. Stay for the fun.
It makes me wonder, does this author have a degree in history or something? Or was this just passion project?
Oh, maybe that could be your one question for the author.
That was actually my one question for the author, so my question was like two-parter.
Because one question for the author, there's your part one. What was your part two?
What made her decide, how would it be if America was a monarchy instead of what we are today?
So she studied English and French literature.
Okay.
She wrote a thesis on castle envy, the idea that American psyche is missing out on something because Americans don't have a royal family of their own.
So that's probably where this idea came from. I've never heard that theory. That is so interesting.
Yeah, she studied English and French literature at Princeton and has an MBA from Stanford. She's been speculating about American royalty since her undergrad days when she wrote a thesis on castle envy.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Well, that answered my question.
My question, if she had to write another alternate history, I'd be curious what she would do.
Ooh.
Now that I know that this is a passion project deep in her heart that she's had for a while, maybe she hasn't really thought it, because she has another book series that is different. So I'd just be curious if she was like, I have to write another alternate history. I wonder what she would come up with.
Yeah.
Rating. I'd give this Finding Love out of 10. I enjoyed this more than I thought that I would enjoy this. I'm not a huge proponent for romance books. I'm not going to go into all of that. So I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I gave mine Complicated Relationships out of 10 because everything's complicated. Why?
Because drama.
Unnecessarily complicated relationships.
Because
drama.
Read again. Yeah, I'd read it a third time. I'm honestly considering purchasing it.
Yeah, I'd read it again.
I read it the first time and I was like, ah, that was nice. I read a couple of the other ones and I've really been enjoying it. And then I've come back to read it again, and to see that it holds up still is kind of nice.
Yeah, I think I'd read it again after reading the whole series. I'd kind of want to go back through and read it with that knowledge of what comes next to see if you could pick up on any of the clues.
Yeah.
But I would totally read it again.
It's a good one. We might just have to pick up the second one.
Yeah, could be fun. We can rant about Sam more.
Thank you for exploring American Royals with us. Join us next time when we'll be covering Straight On Till Morning by Liz Braswell. I'm Sam Reiner.
And I'm Hannah Rossell.
We hope to see you in the frontier next time. Escape With Me Book Club is a Lunar Skulk production. Check us out on TikTok or Instagram to keep up to date with us. Lunar_SKULK.